Ein wunderschönen guten Morgen. Ihr hört Insert Moin. Ich bin der Micha und heute Morgen habe ich zwei wunderbare Gäste am Start, und zwar den Bahat und den Emanuel. Wir werden dieses Interview allerdings auf Englisch führen. Switchen wir jetzt halt zur englischen Sprache, aber ich hoffe, ihr kommt trotzdem ganz gut mit. Hello everyone. This is Insert Moin. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Michael. Nice to meet you too.
Yeah, Bahat and Emanuel, you two are have worked at a project at the Cologne Games Lab, am I right?
Yes.
Yeah. Educational game about practicing German language for Syrian refugees. Correct?
It's not a game to teach German. In fact, it's a game to teach Arabic.
Ah, okay.
Because the main audience we are targeting are the children. Were still in the refugee camp in around Syria, so it means in Turkey, in Jordan, in Iraq, in Lebanon, mm-hmm. and most of them didn't get to regular school currently. Mm-hmm. And some of them since 5 years didn't get into a normal regular school. So in fact, it's a way to support their literacy education.
This is cool. And I got this email from a colleague of yours that worked at the Cologne, and was immediately like, wow, this is very, very interesting. Normally we talk about games that are just like entertainment and fun and I don't do anything else. And this is very interesting because these are games that are actually helping. But before we get to all the game and the project, maybe you can explain where you're coming from and who you are. Maybe Bahat can start. Bajat, is it right?
Okay, yes, that's correct. That's okay. Bajat. That's my name. I come from Aleppo, Syria. And I'm a doctoral candidate at Leibniz Universität Hannover, mm-hmm. University of Hannover. It's been almost 2 years that I'm in Germany. I also came as a refugee. Then I applied to the university and I got the admission to do my doctoral studies. I had a great chance because I contacted Emmanuel to co-supervise my own project with the university. Mm-hmm. Then Emmanuel came up with the EduApp for Syria competition. And then I had the chance to collaborate and work with Cologne Game Lab. I'm 38 years old. I'm here in Germany with my wife and 7-year-old daughter, Nova. My main profession is a language trainer. Mm-hmm. I graduated from Aleppo University in Syria in 2001, holding a bachelor's degree in English language and literature. Then in 2006, I went to Canada and I did my CELTA certification, which is a teaching certification. And then I worked in a couple of international schools, in Syria, in Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates. I also worked in Qatar for 5 years. I worked in Armenia for some time as well at the American University of Armenia, and now in Germany. So I'm a freelancer here. I do language training in some German companies, and I also cooperate with Cologne Game Lab. My main role in the project is the educational part, the pedagogy. Mm-hmm. So I provide all the language contents, all the Arabic learning objectives. That's kind of a brief introduction. If there's anything in detail, let me know.
I think we get to the details later, but let's first Emmanuel introduce himself.
Okay, so I'm Professor Dr. Emmanuel Guardiola from the Cologne Game Lab. It's an institute of the TH Cologne, the Applied Science University of Cologne, and it's really recent that I came to academy world. In fact, I come from the industry. I work in video game industry for 15 years and release around 30 titles, mostly for major companies like Ubisoft. Working on big license like the Tom Clancy games, Splinter Cell, Ghost Recon, Prince of Persia, the first Assassin's Creed, and many big titles from entertainment. And mm-hmm. But also, I work a little part on the game, a brand that we launched at the time called Game for Everyone. And this brand had the specific objective to bring some real-life benefit to the users. It can be some training, teaching, help you to quit smoking, whatever. So the how games can help you to do that. So and that at the same time, I start to be really involved into research project, a more scientific-oriented project. And so it really pleased me. I did my PhD at this moment, and the PhD was about game design methodology to elaborate a psychological profile of the player. So it was really about that. And then I applied to come fully into the academic world, and that was hired by the Cologne Game Lab to teach and to drive research. And so, and in fact, EduHub for Syria contest was my first contest application to be granted in terms of research at this institute. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. This is really interesting because Ubisoft just announced a few days ago that they have created a game that helps patients to train some stuff. This is a game. I don't recall the name. Do you? Emmanuel?
I don't know which one it is.
Yeah, but there's this is very interesting because this is why we also invited you to this podcast, because there are many educational games and many games that were used for medical stuff, for healing patients and so on, that people recognize that games can help actually, and that they can be a part of something that this is just not entertainment and so on, but they can also be part of a therapy, for example, or of a program to learn things or
totally.
Help people. And this is pretty cool actually. And so how did the Cologne Game Lab fit in this? Did they were looking for a project like this, or did you came to them?
In fact, David Searle, the researcher at the Cologne Game Lab, we have research direction related to what are the speciality of the different person working there. One of them is education, obviously, saying, okay, how we can use game to teach things. And using the means of game, because we are all people who love games, and we don't want to do like e-learning app with some kind of point that makes things feel like a little game. No, that's, we are using games as they are. They must be entertaining, and they must provide fun and engagement for players. And we need games from the past, so we want to do still to continue to do game. So in fact, that's the cool thing. So there is one direction that is education, and how we can have what we call stealth learning, how we can use the flow and the focus of player into game to help them to learn something. And there is another interesting direction that is health, for sure. One of the projects we try to set up right now, it's a new one, it's how we can help to fight some mental disease using game. In the past, in one of the previous projects, in the previous institution I was working with, it was the Conservatoire National des Arts et Métiers in Paris, we work on a game to train visual attention of Alzheimer patients.
Ah, okay.
And it was just a prototype, but we make it to targeting particular cognitive abilities of the patient. And now the new project we try to set up here at the Cologne Game Lab is about fighting depression, severe depression amongst teenagers, and seeing how we can create a game that can help to prevent and eventually help during the severe depression phase, and targeting particularly the teenagers, because they are the more at-risk population related to severe depression.
So fighting depression, for example, or learning a language and so on, maybe you can jump in, Bahadur, is how difficult is it to make to educate and making it a game at the same time? Do you have difficulties to put all your language knowledge into the game?
It is actually, it's a challenge actually to put all the learning objectives in the gaming world. Because of course, I come from an academic background where I'm used to language training, whether it's English or Arabic. but in the classical way of planning lessons. Gaming is not a big part of that era, let's say. Now, in the recent couple of years, there has been a big shift in the understanding of lesson planning. It engages more technology and games. And I think I kind of found some difficulties, but of course, Emmanuel was a big help for me. He was such a great guidance. He helped me a lot in how to construct, how to fit the curriculum into gaming blocks. But I absolutely had fun. Later during our talk, I can describe a little bit about the background of how gaming through language would be very important for the Syrian refugees all around the world. But it's a fun adventure. It was my first challenge to put to mix actually the two worlds of education and gaming.
So maybe we can go through the to the project itself. Can you maybe describe the game? How does it look like?
Of course, Emmanuel. Should you or should I?
Please, Badjat.
Okay. The game itself, Antura and the letters, we came with the name Antura. Antura is actually derived from an Arab hero, Antar. It's a very famous historical character in the Arab world. Antar is a knight. Mm-hmm. We came up with this name because most of the Middle Eastern culture, they name their dogs after Antar. So we kind of thought of a name that the kids will be familiar with. Mm-hmm. If we come up with different names, maybe the kids won't have any connections with. So we came with Antar. Antar is the real name of the hero. So we kind of made it cute, Antura, which is a kind of making it smaller and more cute. Mm-hmm. So it fits into the gaming atmosphere. Antura is actually the name of the dog. He helps the player to play with the living letters. Mm-hmm. Very, very cool animated Arabic language alphabet, all the letters themselves. And then the player goes with the help of Antura to create certain words or to play the games with the letters, the sounds of the letters, the articulation of those letters. And then there are a series of, it's actually kind of a journey. A series of mini games, and sometimes some mini games have also an assessment tool, not an official assessment, of course. It's just kind of an evaluation for the parent or for the learner himself. Mm-hmm. To have an idea what he accomplished through playing. So in the first levels of the game, you start with the Arabic alphabet. You start with the formation of the sounds. The letters themselves, because the Arabic language, as you know, apart from the letters, you also have the harakat or tashkil. In English, they call it the diacritic signs.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, there are special signs that change the sound or the function of the letter. Mm. So in the lower levels of the game, it's just the letters. And then the higher you go in the game, the more diacritic signs plus words, the kids start learning how to form words with those letters. Mm-hmm. And then you have lots of vocabulary, because for them to acquire the language, they need to have a good range of vocabulary. So most of the vocabulary we incorporated in the game are taken from the direct or daily life atmosphere of the kids, nature, professions, the community, food, body parts, family members. So those are the first words that any kid in the world acquires when he learns a new language. Then he builds higher, and then he goes. The learner goes to more into the semantics of the language, letters, then words, then basic expressions, or mm-hmm. let's say phrases, where he can learn daily phrases, saying hi, how are you doing, good evening, good night. Mm. And then I think the last stage of the game is where the learner starts forming a full sentence.
Okay.
Of course, a simple sentence, not a complicated sentence. But this gives this actually covers the curriculum, the national curriculum, the Arabic curriculum, from elementary 5 years old to 10 years old.
In comparison to, for example, English or German, how you would say, how difficult is it to learn Arabic from a grammar standpoint?
As a newcomer in Arabic, I can say that it's difficult.
Okay.
And I have feedback from a different language science expert telling us that, okay, the fact that we start with Arabic as the first game, for the first game, is a good point, because now we are ready to face most of languages, because it's so complex, compared to a Latin alphabet. Badger didn't mention the fact that each letter has four different forms depending on the position in a word.
Yeah.
And a word is not constituted of a series of connected letters. It can be separate little groups of letters.
Okay. So
In terms of appropriating the letters, the words, and all their variation with the diacritic, it's enormous. And it's why it takes time to learn Arabic in school.
Exactly. I was Michael. I was going to answer your question.
Yeah.
As Emmanuel pointed out, Arabic is not just a difficult language, but it's a totally different language from European languages.
Okay.
And as Emmanuel said, each letter in Arabic has four shapes. And the connection of the shapes actually define how the letters are pronounced. And then the diacritic signs also come on these letters. And that's totally, lots of many rules as well. So it's totally different language from the European. That's why lots of European people or Westerners find difficulty in Arabic, because there is no way to compare.
Yeah.
Or to find common grounds. I sometimes, when I learn German, because I have good command of English, it's easier for me to learn German because I have a good base in English.
Yeah.
But I have lots of Syrian friends, whose English is not that good, and they found big difficulty in learning German, because switching from Arabic to German is actually it's quite challenging.
It's very interesting. So visualized. It's not like kanji, for example, where the pronunciation of a word, you can see it in a sentence because of the differences in the fonts and so on.
Right.
Okay, that's at least one helpful thing. okay, it's very interesting. So what about grammar, for example? I think from a German perspective, what I learned from other people from that don't speak German tell me is that grammar is very complicated for them. So Emmanuel, maybe.
Okay. In fact, this game on Syria call, the EDR for Syria call. And it was launched by the Norwegian government and originally with several NGO partners. And they had requirements in the call. And the requirements was to set up the basis. So it means letters, how letters make words, acquire some vocabularies, and eventually to train some fluency in terms of reading. Mm. And that's all. So we didn't go into grammar, conjugation. We will only introduce a few rules about masculine, feminine, the three different form of also numbers. If it's a solo, duo, or plural, because there is three different form in Arabic.
Yeah.
And so we only have a few of these rules into it, but it's really light. The main goal is really get the letters, understand that the letters together create words, and acquire by a basic vocabulary. And so it's the early stages of literacy. So yeah, I step in to say we didn't go too much into grammar and conjugation for this game.
Yeah, and it was really funny sometimes when I would when I promoted the certain stages in Arabic language. Sometimes Emmanuel would say, "Oh no, this is a little advanced. We don't have to do that now," because it's hard. It's hard for you to teach Arabic without grammar. And one of the things that is challenging in the Arabic language is it has lots of exceptions to the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Because normally you have, grammar rules in any language, then you have a couple of exceptions. But in Arabic, there are lots of exceptions, which really gets confusing even to Arab native speakers, not only foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
So well, even the rule appeared like an exception. Oh, exactly. No, it's the rule. Ah, okay, that's correct.
Okay, and as Emmanuel pointed out, also in Arabic language, you have it's not just the singular and plural for nouns. You have also the dual. So that also adds another category of thinking and rules and lots of I would say vocabulary involved, and there are certain tiny rules that how to, when you add a certain letter in a word, that changes the whole mechanism of deciding. Yeah, it is really it's a beautiful language, but it's extremely difficult.
So I'm curious, the team that programmed the game, did they understand Arabic or were they Germans?
So in fact, the project originally was at the very beginning when we applied to this call and the Inuit App for Syria grant. In fact, it was Bajat and two other French Syrian in the team and myself. So we were four person, and I was the only non-Arabic speaking person in the team. And when it goes to do the first prototype and also start to work, we create a real team to create the game. And for that, we work with the NGO called Video Game Without Border. Mm-hmm. And they have a community of people all around the world. And so they know they are close to 100 person community, and a majority of them are developers. So they have developers from many places. And then we also include in the consortium to work on this project a Lebanese studio called Wixel Studio, mm-hmm. and it's certainly the major game studio in Beirut. And so with a full Arabic speaking team, so I can say that roughly between one third to half of the team is Arabic speaking, and between people who were hired to develop the game, plus the people who committed voluntarily to the development, we have some more than 60% involved in the project. And when you spread them on a map, it's all around the Mediterranean. You know, we have the sound designer is from Morocco, and we have Lebanese, Syrian people. We have people in Italy, Spain, Germany, Netherlands.
All through around the MENA region, the Middle East, North Africa.
This is beautiful, isn't it? To work on a project like this all around the world. Everybody's around the world is helping.
Absolutely.
In terms of organization, it's not as easy. And you can talk with the producer Francesco Cavallari about he was the pragmatic producer of the game in terms of content, and it means a lot of communication and a particular tool to work. Because when you have spread like this with a large team, because it's a large team to manage, and we use a lot of Slack. You know, for instance, we spend our time connected to Slack
discuss
with to anyone.
Absolutely.
So syncing all the time zones is very complicated. I worked as an indie developer on a remote project too, and sometimes it's like you're going to bed and the other person is waking up at the moment.
it's the case. You know, we had many times ending the night or starting early in the morning, speaking with somebody else somewhere else. That was quite common during this last year.
Yeah, especially when new builds or new versions of the game was coming to check it. Yeah. Sometimes the team would send a build, let's say at midnight, and then we have to check it if there are any issues, and we have to report back to them quick as possible. It was a challenge, but it was absolutely so much fun.
This is good. How long did the project take you? How many months?
18, I don't know, Emmanuel. Was it 15 or 18 months?
So if we count the application period, we start in February last year.
Oh, yes, that's right.
February and March we did the application, and in April, May we start really the development. Huh. So it means that we had, in fact, we applied the 1st of April last year.
Exactly. So 3 years, 3 years alpha, 3 months alpha, 3 months beta, and then 1 year, I think.
In fact, we, even if the game is launched, For us, it's just like an open beta right now. We are in the third phase of the development. So we get our first version online, accessible. We already have many downloads and obviously a good press and review. So cool. And we, but we are still in the process of development, because a part of the development itself is to make a lot of field tests in the Middle East and North Africa. So it's we have many partners where we will start in April to August. From between April and August, we will do many field tests. And the goal of that is to improve the game. There is many aspects that we were not able to test during the development. Even if we already had tests in the development, we work with the German Red Cross in Cologne, and also with WICO, an association who welcome refugees also in Cologne. And so we also have tests in Lebanon with children in Lebanon during the development. We did many, in fact, there is a reason why we did many little playtests all along. It's because none of the game developer involved in this game was or is 5 to 10 year old Syrian children. If you want to do your job correctly in game design and in development, you have to be in contact with them as much as you can and see how they play. Anytime we had some little prototype, Bajat contribute many times.
Yes, exactly. I had the privilege to come from Hanover to Cologne a couple of times to do the playtest, and it's absolutely amazing when you see the results, when the parents provide very, very positive feedback. The kids are learning, they are very happy, because as you know, those kids have really gone through lots of pain, you know, moving out from Syria, coming to Europe through the, you know, refugee stages, the language barrier, the culture, the financials. So for those kids to play and learn Arabic at the same time in a totally different new world, that was a big achievement for them. And, you know, I was really, really happy to hear the positive responses from parents. And I was going to just interfere to say that the main target, of course, or the main audience are the refugee kids from Syria. But of course, it's not inclusive for them only. It's for anyone who is interested in learning the basics of Arabic.
Okay.
And the cool thing about the app as well, the game, that there are some parts that are translated into English within the game. So some people at least could have an idea, you know, what are the meanings of certain words and letters.
You can play it, in fact, and you can learn things. Like we learn Arabic while playing the game and test it. And so.
Yeah. I want to try it, of course. It's very, yeah, we'd very,
like
very
to hear your feedback as well, Michael.
Yeah. That's because I don't know Arabic, not a single word, so I think would be a good source for feedback.
So just I want to close the project thing. In fact, the Edgar for Syria project finish in terms of funding and grant for the project, it finished in December with a new version of the game, maybe with a little push in communication again, with all the learning we will have from all this year of tests in the camp. That's around Syria. That's the thing. The final date is the beginning of December.
Ah, super cool. So I'm really glad to hear that there's so much positive feedback to this, and that the project is going along so well, that you get very positive responses. That was actually my next question, so I'm glad you answered it already. So how about you personally? It's a very difficult time. From a political perspective, because of all the stuff that's happening in the world, and it's very saddening. And so how does it feel for you personally to contribute to this kind of project? Is it a relief to somehow be able to help, even if it's in just a game, so on? If it's your way to contribute to the situation, to help other people to learn language and so on, and give a smile to the kids?
Of course, definitely. Because like the kids as well, when I left Syria, I also went through all the stages, you know, starting a new life, new challenges. But of course, for the kids, it's even harder, because for them, apart from their psychological pain, you have the loss of education.
Yeah.
That's a huge, huge problem. And for me to be part of the project is absolutely amazing, because as an educator, I feel that I'm contributing. Of course, I'm contributing by what I'm doing, but at the same time, I'm helping those kids. I think there is a very huge human responsibility towards me as a Syrian, because sometimes I would like to, you know, take the chance as well and to thank the German people for their amazingly big heart to have the refugees and help them, because you would see people that are totally from a different culture than yours, and they are fully prepared to help you. And at the same time, you think of yourself, I come from Syria, so I should do something even if it's not similar, even more. Mm-hmm. So that's even pushed me more to take the challenge and work on this project. And it was and the results, as I said, some of the parents told me, I'm really happy because my son now is communicating with his relatives through Skype and Viber in Arabic. Mm-hmm. Because some of those kids, you know, during the conflict, they left the country without even starting school. So that was they're building up the Arabic language. So that's a great honor to be part of the project.
Without starting school, it's like here with 4 to 5 years.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because when we did the playtest, I told Emmanuel they were some families that had kids 5 to 10. But some of them had even younger kids.
Okay.
So some of their younger siblings as well, they were interested in playing. Though we told them this is mostly between 5 to 10, The kids were absolutely into it.
To be some point about the Syrian education situation, it's really a tragedy, because Syria was the country in the Middle East with the best rate of scholarship. It's more than 95% of the children were scholar in school, and they have a high level of exigence in terms of education. And so I know most of these kids don't have school at, and some have 10 year old without having a fit in a school. So it's really a tragedy. It's the number we are around 2.8 million
children. Yes. Almost 3 million children,
And most of them in the country around Syria. So that was addressing that. For me, on a personal level, you cannot be not touched by that when you know that you have the means to interact. Also, we had this opportunity to demonstrate what games can do. Now, it's certainly. It's one of the first, maybe not the first, I don't claim that it's, but it's one of the first initiative, I think, that try to prove that a game can be a humanitarian tool.
Exactly.
And it's why we also work closely with Video Game Without Borders, because it's their ambition to show that games can be useful as a vector for intervention. It's not only to sensibilize occidental population, but to act on the field and to do that. And the call to be precise, because it's not only about literacy, it's also it's also about psychosocial well-being of children, and having them playing, involved in the game, engaged. The state of flow you are in when you play is beneficial to fight anxiety. Also, we ask the children to rate himself his mood when he's playing. You know, how do you feel today? You know, and having this thing. So we work with Mark Whitman, Dr. Mark Whitman, who is a German psychologist on this aspect. So that's the thing. It's there is a crisis situation. I feel connected to that because I'm a European. So my parents come from all around Europe. If you go from generation to generation, it's spread all around Europe. And in the history of my family, there was case where people were on the road, they were in poverty, they faced wars. So it's in our history too. So you cannot be a part of it. You know, it's so here there is a time where we can do something, so we do. That's I think it's we cannot stand. And
yeah, exactly. As Emmanuel pointed out, if you have the chance to do something, I mean, you, from your human point of view, you have to do it.
Yeah.
And as I said, lots of organizations and governments are helping refugees. You know, by providing financial support, logistic, anything. But to help those kids in education, you are building something that is endless.
Mm.
You know, their education is what they will, how they will accomplish in their future. So that's very, very important to prove that gaming, as Emmanuel said, could accomplish and achieve. Because lots of people might think of gaming is just as a way of entertainment and fun.
Mm.
So by this project, we prove that education and gaming can do a big change.
This is really, really important. That's very interesting, because 1 week ago I talked to an indie developer and we were had a chat like this, and we talked about the cultural and educational role of games. Like games, of course, have to be fun and to be entertaining, but this is not the only purpose of games. You can, for example, to learn something, to have to be interested in something can be done in a very playful way. Why not integrate games into education, for example? Because for some people, it's way easier to have a game that provides a little challenge and some kind of little play rules and something like that, than instead of talking to one person who is standing in front of the desk. I think it has to be a combination of the two. And
definitely.
This is very interesting, because the developer, she told me that she was like, she wasn't sure if the job she is doing is so helpful as a contribution to society, because she asks herself, other people are working in a hospital, for example, or doing political stuff and so on. She asks herself, is it something I want to do all my life? But your project proves it doesn't matter what you're doing, is you have to find a way to help to the situation with your competence.
Exactly. Definitely.
So there's always a way to help somehow.
Yes, and gaming actually is what gets you as the first excitement. You know, when you want to do anything in the world, if I show you that through gaming, you will be more willing to try that compared to any classical way of saying or lecturing you about it.
I think you can combine this with classical education, with a teacher and so on. And maybe from time to time, he throws in a game and people get, that's a cool way to educate kids, I think. Because after this hard time, after this journey they've gone through, over several days, I think it's, also a good way to teach them something without without being too, without leaving the play aspect out.
In fact, in the initiative, educational initiative with game in the past, so I will put apart game that claim to be game and don't are. I'm talking about real games that used for education. And sometimes it's even shelf games like Civilization can be used in a classroom. In most of the case, it's very interesting to have, after the PlayStation, a step back to talk about what you did with the game and to have a discussion with the student about that, like you do when you use movies in the classroom. You know, you look at the movies, but after that you have the analytic part and how people can make their own opinion, and you discuss about it in the classroom, and that's a positive, an interesting way to use it. In fact, we had the task even harder on this game, because we had to assume the fact that maybe we will be the only way. For some of these kids, we create persona, you know, at the beginning of the project to see, okay, well, to communicate with one, this is the kind of kid that we will address. We can have in mind a children who only have access to the phone maybe 20 minutes a day, because the parents have something else to do with their phones.
Exactly,
their phones are critical element that they need to survive or to try to get all the primary necessary things, to be in contact with their relatives and all these things. And so we know that, okay, they can eventually, in the worst case scenario, they only let the children play maybe half an hour per day or something like that on the phone, because they need the phone otherwise. And so we have this little window to get the kid and bring him something that is useful and can help him. So, and we do some tests. In fact, we start next month in Morocco to have the game as a supporting element in a classroom. to see how it behaves. And I'm sure that we will have some positive feedback from that. And but we try when we start to do tests with that to see how it can be used as a supplement. But in the original call, we had to statute on the fact that maybe it will be only contact of the children with educative system.
So how is the point I just wanted to ask. This is an electronic game. It's a game basically on a computer, on a mobile phone, on a mobile device. Do you think that the age where the kids enter playing the game, do you think this will be the first contact with the electronic game, or no?
they play. They already play video game. Huh?
Yeah, okay, that's something you, okay, because with,
yeah, it's good.
I mean, I'm a bit older because I started playing games with, I think with 10 or so, that's why I'm just curious. I don't know how kids are these days.
I know, but the mobile phone changed the dawn, it changed the world, and that's many children play video games on the on tablets or their parents' phones at minimum, particularly in Middle East. In fact, when we met the children during the playtest, it was one of the questions. Did you play on mobile? What are your favorite game? And we have answered like a racing game, Farmville.
Mostly racing and Farmville, exactly.
Yes. Oh, okay. So we had some example of Zombie Tsunami also.
Yes. Or there's this the other one, that the delivery, that the pizza guy, what was that game? It's very popular.
Pizza Connection? Or?
No, it's this boy who's delivering something and then he's going through obstacles.
Like Paperboy.
It's a runner. It's a runner, yeah.
It's the runner, exactly. Yeah, it's
runner
very
is a type of game that they really like too. I see.
Exactly. Yeah. It might be their first time they play Arabic language game.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But I think in general they've played so many games, as Emmanuel said.
Are there many games that are translated into Arabic?
Even games that are developed in Arabic.
It's not so much though. A couple of them, I guess.
I think I've seen some developers on Gamescom last year. They got there was an international panel, and I think there was one for Arabic developers. But I was curious if this is a language that gets translated in other games, for example.
Well, at the GDC, we had a talk about in the advocacy track at GDC this year. Presenting on Tura, and the thing was we were talking really about what were the learning of making a game on my point of view for another culture and for a target that I'm far away. So and how we what are the challenges we faces and how we handle that. And one of the other presenter during the advocacy track was a woman who was a specialist of translating games from English to Arabic, and so because there is a translation of many, and also many other subject about the representation of Arabic character in video games. And so it means it's really a field that is moving. So the mobile allows the game market to explode in Middle East and North Africa. I think it's something, you know.
Exactly.
Something not the case. Yeah. Not at that point in the previous decades, but now the video game is something in North Africa and Middle East. There is many companies rising and appearing, and so also there was a was this year at distance. I was a jury for I don't know if it's the first, but the Tehran game festival. So we receive 10 or 20 games, videos, and APK on mobiles, and we had to evaluate them in terms of gameplay and things. So I send my contribution. So it's very cool. So you see that the industry and the people, the developer community is really growing.
It's really growing.
It's growing everywhere in Middle East, in Persian world, and in North Africa.
This is cool. This is very interesting. I have to look into that because I think from a cultural standpoint, it's also very interesting to see games from other parts of the world than just the Western ones. That's cool.
Exactly.
Really cool. You can learn something from it. That's what I like the most about it. About different ways of telling stories and so on. That's cool. I think that sums my interview up. I got no further questions. Only one question. Where can people who are interested in your game and or are interested in getting more into the topic and so on, where can people find you in the internet?
They can go on the website of Antora. It's antora.org, mm-hmm. where you can find most of the information. You can find us also on the Google Play and App Store, just mm-hmm. typing Antora in the letters. And even if the game is in Arabic, we promote it in many languages in the mm-hmm. stores. And if it's more information about the research on game, then you can contact the Cologne Game Lab. You will find me. If you go on the site of the Cologne Game Lab, you will find me somewhere in the people supposed to work there.
Mm-hmm. And the game is free as well. Yeah. It's totally playable offline. Mm-hmm. And then, as Emmanuel said, it's available in App Store and Google Play as well. And all the news, you'll find it on the website. Yeah. There's also a Facebook group as well.
Facebook and Twitter. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And Twitter as well.
And maybe one question for the developers that are listening to this podcast. How can a developer who is making games or doing some stuff in media, like doing films and so on, contribute to something like that? Maybe people are interested in helping such a project. How they can contact people to get into such a project?
One of the good way to do it right now, it's to contact Video Game Without Border.
Okay.
Yes.
Because, in fact, here it's a rising community of people who are ready to spend time to help some causes. Mm. And developers and or academic or people sometimes from communication and helping project. They have several projects running. Mm-hmm. Antora is the first game out, but they are running program in Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, and they're also starting a project in collaboration with the Red Cross about sensibilize people about some aspect. So I think it's a good way to start. And also, if they are more into the academic world and one of our objective in the future with Antora mm-hmm. is to make some other languages addressing maybe some other crisis situation or mm-hmm. just maybe to address some places in the world where education is maybe not as standardized as we have in Europe. So mm-hmm. and maybe there is some literacy issues in terms of ratio of literacy education. So we are interested into making other version and maybe not ourselves. What we would like to be in the future is being a support team, transform the game more in a tool that can be used to be adapted and versioned in other languages.
Okay.
So if there is developer who are interested in to try to use it in the future to make other languages, we will contribute and partner with them for sure.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, that would be really something to extend working on it. Yeah.
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense if you got the basis and can switch the language and so on. That would be a huge benefit for other languages too. Super cool. Thank you very, very much for your time. Thank you very much for this interview. I really like what you're doing. I hope it's going to be better, right?
It's an open beta, but it's totally playable. You can go through the entire game. It's okay right now.
I hope you get rich feedback to finalize the game and to get all the little things out of the, that are making it. Oh, goddamn it! Finalize the game? Is it the right word? I need to practice my English.
You should
be learning programming for English.
Yeah, English. We should do English and German as well.
Yeah, German and English, just to avoid these situations. But I hope you get all the rich feedback you need.
Thank you.
So if people got questions, you can put this in the comment section of our podcast right below in the blog post. And I'm sure if somebody got a special question, they can also contact you. Okay.
Definitely.
Thank you, Michael.
Bajat, Emmanuel, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Michael. That's a great chance. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.